Welcome to Equipped in Grace, where we talk about following Jesus in the chaos of real life. I'm Vinny Pizarski, and if you've ever wondered how to bring your Sunday faith into your Monday meetings, your parenting, your relationships, or just your everyday mess, then this podcast is for you. So let's get outside of the church pew and get equipped for discipleship in the wild world in which we live. Today on the show, we are going to dive into a conversation with Kelsey Lukasiewicz, who contributed a small part of her story to our church devotional book this year, and I found it to be a very interesting story, and I think a very relatable story of working through identity, self-image, and the long journey of finding freedom in those areas. In our conversation, we were able to go into much greater detail than what would fit in our church devotional book, and as such, this episode will actually be split into two parts. So be sure to come back next week to hear the rest of Kelsey's story. With that said, let's dive right in. Life has a way of putting things on us that we never sought out, and those things are often harder to sort out as we work through them. So, Kelsey, in your story, you were a happy little 10-year-old girl, and you experienced an interruption, shall we say, in your life that put you on a rather destructive path that took a while to climb out of. So start off by telling us about that 10-year-old and what happened.
Yes. So like I said, I was 10, fourth grade, and we were at recess, just a regular school day. I was at school and like you said, I loved life. I had nothing wrong with it. I just, what I said in my devotional is I exuded joy. I just loved it. So, you know, a 10-year-old just playing on the playground. I will say I was a little rebellious in the fact that I was on top the monkey bars when you were told to not be. Mm. My school does not know that. So if anyone from my school ever hears this story, I'm so sorry. They apparently still talk about this story today.
Oh my gosh.
But anyway, so I was getting off the monkey bars at recess. And so kind of gently putting my foot down onto the ladder rung. Mm-hmm. And in that process, because it was a little further than it should have been because I was on the top, I had to slightly let myself drop onto it. And when I did that, my foot slipped. I fell forward onto the monkey bar. Ooh. I'm sorry, the ladder rung. Fell forward onto the ladder rung, and the ladder rung just hit me right up. I'm somewhere on the ribs. I honestly, you know, it was such a flash. I don't remember. Miraculously, I did not break a rib, so it landed somewhere in that. But of course, it was an immediate. I was out of breath. I had no idea what was going on. Thankfully, I was with my best friend in elementary school, and she recognized that there was something drastically wrong.
Right.
Ran up. Of course, there was a big hill we had to get to where all the teachers sat during recess. And so she ran up this hill and just told them what happened. And they didn't know the severity of the situation at the time. So I had to walk up this hill to go where the teachers are. And then I get up there. And I think that's when they recognized the severity because I was...
That they should have walked down the hill, maybe.
Maybe they were like, gosh, these kids, I swear. But
that's fair.
And so I was apparently white as a day. My mom tells me this. And so I get up there, like still not breathing. And so they send the principal out with a wheelchair. My principal and my teacher at the time wheel me back in, running to the school. And I was just put in the administration office, which is, you know, right in the front door. Mm-hmm. Lined with windows, of course. And all these classes are going to recess. So I was very much on display. And I was very concerned about that because I was like, wow, this is in the little consciousness that I had. But yeah, I was sitting in that office. I was in this wheelchair and they called my parents, obviously. So it was a crazy time for my family. I think it was about a month or two ago, my dad had actually gotten in a very severe car accident. Oh. And so he was not working. So then someone from our school had to go grab him as well, bring him. My mom had to come to the school. And we obviously had no idea what was going on. But from the school, I was then taken in an ambulance to a hospital. They did not have the equipment to treat such a traumatic incident. Mm. So from that hospital, was then transported again to another hospital.
My goodness.
Ended up, I don't even know. We were living in Kentucky at the time. We were in Lexington. So some crazy hospital over there. I remember very little about all of that, of course. I was definitely going in and out of consciousness. But I remember in this, in the emergency room we finally landed. It was a trauma response center. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was lying on this table and there were floods of people around me. And I found out after the fact, it was 14 doctors all. 10 to me at the same time. And I'm 10, you know.
All the king's horses and all the king's men.
Yes. You know, thank you. I was such a hot commodity that day, but it was intense. And I just remember just being overwhelmed because I have no idea what's going on. You know, go from being on top of the monkey bars to being lying on this table with a ton of people around me being frantic. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, putting needles in me, whatever else. And eventually, I don't even know what happened in that room, but eventually I got to the ICU where I stayed for 2 nights. But the verdict was that I had lacerated my liver. Oh. So it busted open is basically what that means. And like
that's
I said,
somehow that's worse than lacerated.
I know. I always say lacerated. They're like, I don't really know what that means.
Just to me, I'm like, that's like a little slit.
Yes.
Has been cut. No, you like popped it like a water balloon.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, this is a graphic episode now.
Yeah, things you didn't know about the body. But yeah, so I lacerated my liver and miraculously did not break a rib. I did not get a concussion. It was truly just that. But I stayed there for 2 nights and then was in the regular hospital after that for, I think, 3 or 4. I can't remember at this time. But yeah, it was quite the tragic incident and not something you really expect to go through at that young of an age.
No. Well, and typically that is a little out of the ordinary. Typically, if someone falls off the monkey bars, the broken bone is probably.
Yes.
Or the concussion. Maybe you crack your head open. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of the worst case scenarios.
Right.
Lacerated the liver. I now understand why doctors use such big terms. It's to keep us from realizing.
What does that mean?
Just how gross what's happening in our body is. But so yeah, that's definitely not on people's radar that's what would happen if you fall off the monkey bars. So you're in the hospital, I imagine, for a while.
Yeah, it was about a week, I think, in total. Maybe a little bit less. But I, at that point, because I was so young, this is what I'm told. You know, I never 100% know how accurate they're being in this. So they kind of grade it on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being death of the severity of this incident. and so I was just about a 3, where 4 would have been emergency surgery.
Okay.
So I was at a 3 and I was told that it was because I was so young that this was like, okay, her body is in this process where it can tend to itself. It can heal. Mm-hmm. It was a dangerous surgery if it had to do it. So, we're going to let her heal. So, I mean, it was, though I was in a hospital for a week, the recovery itself was months. And so I remember just being at home. I can't remember how long I was at home. I missed a lot of school. I did school, but never went to school. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I was at home with one of my parents at all times, just living in this aftermath. And I truly was just swelling from the inside because it was just my body was still bleeding. My liver was still trying to heal.
Yeah.
So I continually kept swelling and there was nothing I could do about it. And I wish I remembered more details about the time of like, gosh, what did I feel? I don't even remember. Mm-hmm. And so it was just this really odd experience of honestly not knowing the severity of the situation when I was so young. My biggest concern the first night in the hospital when I was in the ICU was that one of my really good friends was having a birthday party the next day. It was a Friday. Oh. It happened on a Thursday. And I was crying because I could not go to this birthday party. But it was, I didn't understand what was happening. And so.
Yeah. You're like, I don't know what lacerated means. Exactly. Why can't I go to the party and have cake?
Yeah.
Totally reasonable.
Yeah. So it's not really until you're an adult that I put myself in my parents' shoes at that point. You get a call that your daughter has this incredibly severe accident on the playground and you have to respond. And so now being an adult and understanding, oh my gosh, that your 10-year-old, that is, that is young.
Yeah.
Is going through this and you have to respond. So yeah, understand now a lot more of what that situation was.
Yeah. And yeah, no birthday party.
No birthday party. I know. I felt like they were going to be so mad at me, but you know, I think they got over it, but
probably the fact that you lived.
Yes.
Was gift enough.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Made it freezy. But
so that's happening. Mm-hmm. Your body is swelling. Mm-hmm. I imagine relatives are bringing over get well treats and cards and all of that. And you talk about in your story that I read, seeing a picture of yourself with your sisters, and it changed your perspective in a way that wasn't helpful, but is part of your story. So tell us about that.
Yes. So it was true. I did gain some weight during this time. One, because I was quite literally swollen. And then I was unable to do any activity. There was a huge part of it. Yeah, it was, I remember the first activity I did, I sat at the top of our driveway and could push a ball down the driveway. And that was pushing it. So
yeah.
Was really limited. And as someone who was always active and playing, that was hard. But I also, you know, you're a kid and you're in your, if someone's giving me junk food phase, I'm going to eat my junk food. And so.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I got a lot of gift baskets, a lot of treats, and sitting at home, you're just going through those. And so I did gain some weight. And like you said, kind of just at the time, I didn't think anything of it. Why would I? I was 10.
Yeah.
And then about a year after that, during this time of healing from my liver, we went to my cousin's wedding, and it was a picture of myself and my two sisters at this wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at this. I would have been 11 at the time. And I looked at this photo and saw myself very differently. I saw this very overweight 10-year-old, and I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. I saw this and had no idea I looked that bad. I remember how I processed it. I was truly embarrassed.
Sure. Well, you probably, again, like it's a, we all have a moment where we look back on a hairstyle we chose, a season of life, and go, what was I thinking?
Yes.
The moment of self-realization, but this one a bit more shocking considering all the trauma that you had already gone through, which it makes enough sense. Like you can't go anywhere. You have this injury. Like, the gift baskets, that's as good as it's going to get.
Mm-hmm.
But all the same, now you're looking back a little bit and now your image of yourself has changed. What did that manifest into?
Yes, I was, I said this in my story as well. I mean, I just saw myself as disgusting is the best way I put it. And for an 11-year-old to be thinking that is crazy to me.
Yeah.
And it was really a moment. The way I've just described it over processing it over the last year and a half is just like that was really Satan's opportunity to kind of come in and take my innocence.
Right.
Because I was very innocent as a 10-year-old. Who wouldn't be?
And you don't have the tools at that age to process that complex and that sudden of a thought.
Right. Absolutely. And so I saw that and I immediately said, well, something has to change. I grew up a very tomboy. I was always playing with the guys. I was always out there being the active person, but I happened to fit in with all my friends were the cool popular girls. I don't know how it happened, but it did. So I was always with them, but then always playing with the guys. And so I was in this position of the guys always being interested in my friends, but then I'm just the bro kind of. So on top of that, you know, I saw that photo and it made sense to me why the guys were never interested in me. And so it became this thing where I saw myself as, in a very stereotypical sense, you know, people like skinny, people like pretty. You know, that's a message that has been preached through industry terms for a while.
Yeah.
We're getting better at it as a society, but I think there's still some underlying roots that still, appear. And I remember just seeing that photo and saying, I'm disgusting. I'm hideous. I can't change my face. I'm kind of stuck with that, but I can change my body. And it was kind of a slower process to start into how I saw that, but it wasn't an immediate switch. But I remember seeing that being like, well, okay, I have to learn about nutrition now.
Mm-hmm.
And so being 11, I'm trying to understand nutrition, which can be a relatively complex subject depending on how deep you get into it. But I just kind of started more so obsessing about nutrition, asking my mom a lot of what's fat and, you know, those kind of things. And so, you know, you see yourself as fat. You think you have to eliminate fat. Makes sense to an 11-year-old. And so it just started kind of slowly. I started eating a bunch of just kind of empty carbs or empty calories, non-fat items, fruits, pretzels, you know, things like that. And then, I mean, I started to drop a little bit of weight. And then there was somewhere along the line, I don't even remember how it happened. We either learned it in school or something, but I understood, oh, wait a second. It's calories. It's not fat. The calories you eat impact it. And so that transition became, okay, I'm going to start restricting my calories. And again, I mean, I was seeing results. And
right. It's simple math.
Absolutely.
Less calories, less fat.
Yeah. So it was the winter of when I was 11 is when it was really like hitting home for me. So it started in about October. And then I slowly progressed over the fall into the winter and just being like, okay, this is where I rested was in restricting calories.
Yeah.
And then I I said it in my story as well, but I was really good at it. That's just, it's how I describe it. I am very, I have great self-control when I need to, and mm-hmm. I needed to then. So
right. Your mind can justify the importance.
Absolutely. So I was great at counting calories. I was great at watching what I ate. I really honed in on this mm-hmm. and it became my life. It was my every thought, my every action. I mean, I went to bed thinking about the calories I ate for that day. I counted them up. I was also thinking about, okay, what's tomorrow's calorie content going to be? What are we going to eat? How are we going to go about the day? It was constantly on my mind, just going through, calculating at all times. What calories was I eating? How much activity did I need to do because of the calories I ate?
Oh, wow.
If I would come home from school, we had these one pretzels that my parents bought at the time. And I was like, if I wanted a little bit of extra pretzels, that meant I would go, and I used to jump rope a lot when I was a kid. I had a jump rope 15 minutes longer if I decided to have one or two extra pretzels. So it was just, it was always an equation. Mm-hmm. And it truly consumed my life. I couldn't think about anything else. And so I was very not present during that time. Mm. And I, Lord bless my parents, because they had, my sisters and I are all about a year and a half apart anyway. So by this time, when I was really in depth of this eating disorder, I was 12. I was in the seventh grade. Was when I was at my lowest. Between the seventh and the eighth grade is when I was kind of really capitalizing on this. Mm-hmm. And I was unbearable, probably. I mean, just moody. You're going through puberty. I'm not eating. Yeah.
And now you're underfed.
Exactly. Now I'm underfed. I'm incredibly now
hangry and raging with hormones.
Yes, exactly. So everyone's favorite. I mean, but yeah, so it really just it took over my life. Mm-hmm.
So, and that honestly is like, it's kind of a slippery slope. I feel like mm-hmm. that's kind of how the devil gets us. It starts off well-intentioned enough mm-hmm. and then it starts to cascade.
Absolutely.
And so it's cascading at this point mm-hmm. and you've gotten very good at it, very mm-hmm. efficient. It's now in your head. I remember rehabilitation was mentioned yes. at some point in your story. What got you there and what was that like?
Yes. So I was diagnosed with anorexia. I was trying to hide it for a very long time. I knew what I was doing was not right there, right. but it was not enough to make me stop, because in the same time I needed to do it. But there were definitely moments that, I mean, I was trying to hide it from my parents as much as possible. Wear baggy clothes, all these things to really hide what was going on. Mm-hmm. Even though it was probably insanely obvious, but my pediatrician, when I was in the seventh grade, at one point it was just a regular checkup. And I remember going in wearing as many layers as possible to try to add on some weight. Mm-hmm. So I knew I was going to have to get weighed. And I can't remember what the number was. It was something within the year of seeing her as between the ages of 10 and 11, 11, 12, somewhere one of those ranges. I lost about 30 pounds. And for that age, obviously, that's not the way you're supposed to go.
Right. That's a lot for that age anyway, because, you know, that's you're not starting at a very high number.
Exactly. Yeah. So she was kind of the first that was alerted us to this and was like, you kind of called me out. Mm-hmm. We tried, but we also had no idea what to do. Mm-hmm. You're given this, again, kind of like a very traumatic thing. And my parents have never dealt with it before. I knew what I was doing, but I was never going to label myself as anorexic. And so we attempted to kind of do recovery on my own. So through the summer of seventh grade into eighth grade, was just trying to get me to eat a little bit more, get me to understand. And I played the cards right. I mean, I was kind of giving my parents the, you know, assurance they needed that I was changing and eating a little bit more. And I was. And then, you know, come eighth grade, it hit again. And I played soccer. I was all throughout my childhood. So I always had to make sure I was fueling myself for soccer. And then as soon as soccer season ended, though, especially, is really when it ramped back up again. And then that's when my parents kind of knew that it was out of our hands. We needed professional help. And granted, we needed it a while ago, but we're trying to understand this process together.
Oh, yes.
So I started seeing a therapist in Columbus who specialized in eating disorders. And I started going to her reluctantly, but my poor parents had to drive there. I don't know how many times a week. I think it was twice. But started seeing her, and in the process of seeing her over 3 or 4 months, I just continued to drop weight.
Oh my.
And to be honest, I mean, it's incredibly shallow. And a lot of it feels shallow when I look at it now, just the obsession over appearance in general and how I saw other people as well. But mm-hmm. my counselor was more so on the overweight side. And that to me, I walk into her office the first day and my immediate thought is, this woman has no idea what I'm going through. No way am I, I'm not listening to her. Sure. I'm not going to end up like you. So very self-consumed, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I did not listen to a thing she said because of that. So I just continued to drop weight. And it was it was about May, I believe, is when it happened. And she finally was like, this is not working. This counseling is not working. She talked to my parents and basically, you know, because I was a child, I was forced into rehab. She told me that, you know, this is not something she can handle herself anymore. I have to be hospitalized for this. So the day my eighth grade class left for the DC trip, which I was supposed to go on, everyone knows the DC mm-hmm. trip. I left for a rehabilitation facility in Wisconsin. We were living
Wisconsin.
Yes. Good old Wisconsin, Milwaukee, shout out. But but it was, we were living in Athens, Ohio at the time. Mm-hmm. And so quite a distance, but insurance, you know, plays a fun part into that. But so I was in Wisconsin and I was in inpatient for a week and then moved into outpatient therapy. So it was kicking and screaming. I got there. And of course, I mean, it's not the journey I wanted to take. I knew at that point my mission had failed. I knew that I was no longer in control of this. I was caught. I think part of me knew it wasn't going to last forever, but the other part of me that was quite literally dying on the inside needed to be caught. Got into the inpatient and there's a whole, you know, continuous story from there, but that's kind of where the rehabilitation started.
Well, with that, we're going to begin to draw this week's episode towards a close. It's a bit more of a cliffhanger than usual, but I'm very excited to invite you to come back next week as we hear the rest of Kelsey's story as she journeys through rehabilitation and eventually into rejuvenation and freedom. Before we go, I would like to highlight something that Kelsey just mentioned in her story. She knew what she was doing couldn't last forever and recognized that she actually needed to be caught. Sometimes in life, we all get caught up in something that gets out of our control. We know it's not good. We know it may even be destructive to us or to others, and yet we're not stopping. We keep right on going. In reflecting on those times in my own life, I'm so grateful to God for letting me get caught. It was painful in the moment, and even in the weeks that followed, but the eventual freedom that I got to experience from what I had been doing was so very worth it. Perhaps you're sensing you may be in one of those moments right now, and something you thought to be harmless at first has gotten out of control, or now has control of you. If so, I'd like to encourage you by saying, it's okay to admit that we don't have it all together all the time, and that we need help to get out of the mess we found ourselves in. In my own battle with lust as a teenager and a young adult, I had to get caught, as well as turn myself in a time or two to seek the help of others to overcome the struggle. Just know you're not alone. We've all been someplace we know we shouldn't have been at some time or another. In Psalm 51, David is actually pouring out his heart to God after he had been caught in his own sin, in adultery. And in verse 8, he says, "Let the bones you have crushed rejoice." It's a rather curious metaphor, but David is thanking God for breaking in and disciplining him, humbling him, and redirecting him back to God's path. Think of those times in your life, and let's all thank God for graciously disciplining us when we needed it and for when we'll need it again in the future. Well, that's all for today, but thanks so much for joining us and listening to this episode of Equipped in Grace. Be sure to stay tuned for our next episode by following or subscribing to the show on the podcast app of your choice. I can't wait to have you all back to hear the conclusion of Kelsey's story. Until then, may the Lord bless you and keep you. Bye-bye.